Don't you love those? All right, thank you for the introduction. It's a real pleasure to be a part of this session. I know it's kind of tough being the last day of a conference with the last time slot, but we really appreciate everyone who came today. I'm going to be presenting on couples pregnancy ambivalence in Indonesia. And I've been working on this with a colleague of mine at Measure Evaluation, Eileen Spicer. She's also a research associate there and a faculty member in the MCH department at the UNC School of Public Health. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Okay, so what is pregnancy ambivalence? This is our best stab at a working definition. It's the expression of seemingly contrary fertility desires and or the expression of fertility desires that are contrary to contraceptive behavior. The issue of pregnancy ambivalence really came to the foreground after Trussell and colleagues, using NSFG data from 1995, found that about 32% of women who experienced a contraceptive failure, meaning that they became pregnant while using contraception, did not report the pregnancies as unintended. Moreover, the vast majority of these women, or 90%, reported being happy or very happy about the pregnancy. Such results led us to think that pregnancy intentions are not as clearly defined or as straightforward as we researchers often consider them to be. And pregnancy ambivalence may be one explanation for the reason that fertility desires, pregnancy intendedness, and contraceptive use don't always agree. So why study ambivalence, or why should we care about this topic? Well, there's some public health implications. First of all, women with ambivalent pregnancy attitudes are less likely to be current users of contraception, and when they are using, they tend to use less effective methods and to use them less effectively. So pregnancy ambivalence can lead to contraceptive failure and contraceptive discontinuation for reasons other than to become pregnant. In addition, pregnancy intentions are useful for predicting population fertility trends, for understanding fertility-related behavior, and for designing an evaluation and evaluating the effectiveness of family planning programs. However, our need to label or categorize these fertility desires may misrepresent the truth, particularly for women who have vague, unknown, or varying pregnancy intentions. Up to this point, pregnancy ambivalence has only been studied in women, using women's fertility desires and intentions. So we really don't know about pregnancy ambivalence in the partner and whether that influences women's reported fertility desires or fertility behaviors. So the objectives for this analysis were to explore the issue of ambivalence using a couple's perspective with recent data from Indonesia. And in particular, our research questions were, how do husbands and wives respond to the same questions on fertility desires? Is there evidence of pregnancy ambivalence in both husbands and wives? And if so, what is the correspondence between husbands and wives' ambivalent attitudes? And finally, does pregnancy ambivalence actually influence women's contraceptive use? So the data comes from the Indonesia Demographic and Health Survey from 2002-2003, and there are a couple reasons we chose this particular data set. The first is that it collected information on fertility desires from both men and women and allowed us to use a matched couples data set. And also, very importantly, Indonesia DHS was one of only a few in the world that has asked a key question that we're using for assessing ambivalence from both the women and men. And the question is what I'm going to be referring to as the problem question throughout the rest of the presentation. And it's, in the next few weeks, if you discovered that you or your spouse were pregnant, would that be a big problem, a small problem, or no problem for you? Okay, so we have a sample of 5,148 couples who responded to the problem question and were not missing any key variables used in the analysis. So that excludes infecund or pregnant wives, infecund husbands, wives that reported they were not currently having sex, and wives who previously stated that they wanted a child sooner now, because those women weren't asked the problem question, And then we reduced the sample 1.3% more to avoid any missing variables. We combined our responses from the problem questions so that it's categorized as no problem versus any problem. And we also have other variables, including current contraceptive use, fertility desires, age, education, the number of children ever born, and household wealth. So we have a number of descriptive comparisons and then a multivariate analysis with contraceptive use as the outcome. And we've weighted all the proportions for sample design. Okay, so this slide shows husbands and wives' responses to the key survey questions. First, we note that most couples, or about 3/4, are using contraception. Also, the majority of our sample reports wanting to delay a birth for more than 2 years or to stop childbearing altogether. Finally, we see a large proportion of men and women report that a pregnancy in the next few weeks would be no problem. Interestingly, the proportion of men giving this response is much higher than the proportion of women, 72% to 55%. And the proportion reporting that it would be a small problem is generally the same for both husbands and wives, and that's less than 10%. So now we're going to look at contraceptive use and fertility desires. And this table shows a cross-tabulation of contraceptive use by fertility desires. We could assume that the individuals who want to delay or stop childbearing and are using contraception are the most motivated to avoid a pregnancy. Conversely, individuals who want to delay or stop childbearing but are not using contraception, in this case about 20 to 25% of husbands and wives, are usually classified as having unmet need and targeted for family planning programs. So now we're going to peel back the layers a little bit more and look at pregnancy ambivalence within groups of contraceptive users and non-users. This first table is a cross-tabulation of fertility desires by husbands and wives' responses to the problem question among users of contraception. First, we note that the responses of no problem are more common in men than women for all categories of fertility desires. And secondly, that there is a trend in fertility desires and whether a pregnancy would be a problem or not. Individuals that don't want any more children are least likely to say that a pregnancy in the next few weeks would be no problem. However, almost half of wives and 2/3 of husbands wanting no more children exhibit pregnancy ambivalence. This is the same cross-tabulation of fertility desires and responses to the problem question, this time among non-users. In this case, the highlighted rows indicate what is typically referred to as having an unmet need for contraception. That is, these individuals want to delay or stop childbearing but are not using any method of contraception. Looking at these two groups, we see that ambivalence is basically the same as it was in the contraceptive users. For example, only about 38% of husbands and 54% of wives who do not want any more children say that a pregnancy in the next few weeks would be any problem for them. This suggests that even though couples are identified as having unmet need, many are not strongly adverse to having a pregnancy and may not be highly motivated to adopt contraception. This table shows the degree of concordance on the problem question for couples in which both partners agreed about contraceptive use and fertility desires. And before looking at this comparison, we first looked at concordance on contraceptive use, which is a more objective measure, and couples had an agreement of 90% and a Kappa statistic of 0.7. We also looked at concordance on not wanting any more children, which had an agreement of 82% and a Kappa statistic of 0.6. Among contraceptive users that want to delay or stop childbearing, the concordance on the problem question is lower, at 63% agreement with a Kappa value of 0.2. Discordance comes from a fairly high percentage of couples in which the husband reported no problem and the wife reported either a big or small problem. We might assume that the 21% of couples agreeing that there would be a problem if a pregnancy occurred in the next few weeks would be the most motivated users of contraception. This table shows the same analysis of couple concordance on the problem question, this time for the non-users. Here we see the same level of agreement as shown in the previous table. Only 20% of couples agree that a pregnancy in the next few weeks would be a problem for them. In contrast, 36% of couples agree that a pregnancy in the near future would be no problem. These couples would likely be the group of non-users least likely to adopt contraception. So we know that pregnancy ambivalence is relatively high in this population, and that couples' concordance on pregnancy ambivalence is relatively low in both users and non-users of contraception. What we don't know is whether this has any measurable effect on fertility behavior. In particular, are couples influencing each other? Do inconsistent pregnancy desires influence contraceptive use? So that's what we're going to look at with a multivariate regression analysis. So we ran a regression using wives' reported contraceptive use as the dependent variable for the subsample of couples in which at least one partner wants to delay or stop childbearing. In other words, at least one partner expresses a need for family planning. We controlled for a number of demographic characteristics, including age, education, number of children ever born, and household wealth. Couples ambivalence was categorized as one partner is ambivalent, that's the discordant couples. They're either both ambivalent or neither ambivalent, and that's the reference group. And then for the couple's fertility desires, the categories are one partner wants to delay while the other one wants to stop, one partner wants to delay or stop while the other wants another child within 2 years or is undecided, or they both want to delay or they both want to stop, and that's the reference group. Okay, so this graph shows the effects of the ambivalence and fertility desire variables on wife's contraceptive use for our subsample of couples. The results are adjusted for the other variables that I mentioned earlier, and all of which I just want to add showed significance in the model. Okay, for this graph, a variable with no effect on contraceptive use is shown as a 1. A variable that increases the likelihood of contraceptive use would be greater than 1, and a variable that decreases the likelihood of contraceptive use is shown as less than 1. And of course, the further away from 1, the stronger the effect of the variable. And what we see is that for ambivalence, compared to couples in which both partners were not ambivalent, being discordant significantly decreased the likelihood of contraceptive use by about 25%. Also, having discordant fertility desires decreased the likelihood of contraceptive use by 30% or 60%, particularly if one partner wants another child soon or is undecided. However, and interestingly, there is no difference in contraceptive use or non-use when both partners express pregnancy ambivalence. And this is a finding that we aren't quite sure how to explain just yet. We've talked about the matter a little bit, and we're guessing there might be an effect of couples' communication on that variable that we need to tweak a little bit more. But the finding definitely deserves some more investigation. So in conclusion, for Indonesia, we found that more men than women express ambivalence, and because men are generally more pronatalist, this may present barriers to contraceptive adoption, effective and or continuous use. Secondly, that there's not always agreement within the couple, and that women in couples that were discordant on pregnancy ambivalence were significantly less likely to be using contraception. And if pregnancy ambivalence is to be addressed programmatically, both members of a couple should be targeted. Programs aimed at improving contraceptive continuation should also consider the impact of ambivalence on effective and continuous use. And finally, pregnancy ambivalence in non-users indicates that estimates of true unmet need may be too high. And that's all I have. Thank you for your attention.
Very interesting. Thanks for presenting. Any questions for Janine? We've got time. Yes.
That's really fascinating. Thank you. I was wondering the whole time you were talking about the discord and ambivalence, and I was trying to keep the wording of your ambivalence question in my head, because my first thought was that if one partner wants, you know, has one desired outcome and thinks the other partner has a different desired outcome, then her answer to the question, problem question, might look like ambivalence, so it looks like it would be a problem, but in fact for her personally, impersonally, it might not be a problem, but they're incorporating, instead of saying they're incorporating their perception of the partner's view into their answer about ambivalence, I'm just wondering if that might feed into your
You know, that's something we should look at, because this, we don't show what she thinks her partner would say, and they don't ask what they think their partner would say to that question, but we might get her perception of his fertility desires, so we might be able to include that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Right.
Her partner's
yeah.
Question. So she says, yes, I want a child.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I agree. That's definitely something we should look into. Yeah.
Any other questions? Yeah.
Could you just give maybe just a quick snapshot of what the fertility picture is in Indonesia and reproductive use of family planning or fertility methods?
Yeah. Actually, the data was great for this study, but it's kind of an interesting country to do it in because contraceptive use is fairly high. It's about 60% of married couples. So they are using, and they're using, and their fertility level, I think, is fairly low. I'd say it's two something. So they're using contraception, and they're using it effectively, but that doesn't mean that they also don't have unintended pregnancies and births that they'd want to avoid. So there's always room to look at this issue. But we've looked at ambivalence in other countries in Africa where contraceptive use is much lower, and ambivalence may play more of a role in actual adoption of contraception. And it's interesting because we don't have any information on men in those countries, but the women's ambivalence was much lower. So it's higher in Indonesia, and it's especially high for men, even though they're using contraception. So I don't know.
Yeah. Sure.
Do you know how many countries that participate in the DHS have that question?
Well, the issue is not if they have, well, I think a lot of them have that question, but not all of them. But the issue is having them ask that question to the men, and very few had that. And I think like another data set was Dominican Republic, but the sample size was too small to be able to do any analysis with it. So, yeah. And we also wanted to have countries that had at least a good number of contraceptive users. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Very interesting.
Our fourth presentation this afternoon is by Dr. Diana Romero, and she's going to be speaking on differences in attitudes concerning childbearing and family formation among poor and non-poor women and men.